Rush splashed over to the spot. "This job is tougher than I thought it would be. How do the beavers do it?"
"Well, for one thing, they have tails as well as hands to work with," said Mona, scooping up dead leaves.
"Yes, and teeth," agreed Rush. "Every beaver I ever saw had teeth like a Japanese general's."
"Don't be discouraged, Rush," said Randy piously. "Think of Boulder Dam. I bet those men didn't get discouraged."
Rush had to laugh at that.
By noon, however, the dam looked something like a dam, and the pool was beginning to fill up.
"Another couple of days," Rush said.
"What about lunch?" inquired Oliver practically. He was feeling the justified hunger pangs of a day laborer.
"Oh, lunch," Rush was cross. "That's the trouble with life. You get to work on an idea or a piece of music or a dam or something, all concentrated and working right, and then suddenly, at an arbitrary time, you have to stop and eat food. Chew and swallow, 3 times a day. It's a silly habit."
"Trouble with you is you're hungry," said Mona tranquilly. "And you're cross, because you know you'll have to wash off all that mud before Cuffy lets you in the house."
"What's an arbitrary time?" asked Oliver.
"Lunchtime, I guess he means," Randy told him. "Oh, look, here comes Cuffy, and I think, yes, how swell! She has got our lunch with her."
Good old Cuffy. They watched her coming toward them, white and fat and round, like a pigeon on the lawn. She had a basket and a thermos bottle. When they flung themselves upon her in gratitude and greed, she brushed them aside.
"Go on with you," she scolded, pretending to be annoyed. "I just wanted to keep your muddy tracks out of the house."
But the Melendis knew that that was only partly true. Cuffy believed in a little pleasant spoiling blended with discipline. She had been taking care of them so long that in many ways they felt as if she were their mother, whom they had lost a long time before. Or more like a very special grandmother, perhaps, since she was white-haired and roly-poly.
"Cuffy, you come and eat with us," said Oliver, pushing his dirty paw into her clean pink one.
"No, no, my lamb. I'm going to mop myself into a corner of the kitchen and have a cup of tea. And don't one of you dare come in until it's dry."
The children sat on the grass with their bare, muddy legs stretched out before them in the sunshine. The brook sang and tinkled in the shade. Across the lawn, all smothered in vines and sheltered by Norway spruce trees, stood their house, the strange house that they lived in and that they loved. It was a square old building, with quantities of ornamental iron trimming, a mansard roof, and a fancy little cupola, like a frosted cake, perched on top of it. The four-story mistake, the house was called, because years ago, when it was built, the architect had made a mistake and left off a story. The Melendis had only moved into it in the fall, but they did not like to believe that they had ever lived anywhere else. There were still surprises that it could give them, though. Now that June was here, the old ragged-looking vine over the kitchen door had suddenly become a cascade of little yellow roses that smelled like tea. The grass in the orchard was full of tiny wild strawberries, hot from the sun and sweet as honey. And in the spruce tree outside Rush's window, an oriole had built its nest, a silver purse full of gold.
"All summer," said Rush, with his mouth full. "Think of it, all summer long."
"All summer what?" Mona wanted to know.
"Just all summer," Rush said happily. "I mean, this is only the beginning of it. Dams and swimming and the garden and picnics and hot days and all. Oh, boy!
Sometimes it will rain, and sometimes we'll get stomach aches.
And sometimes Cuffy will be cross," said Oliver realistically. Rush laughed. "A pessimist at 7.
8, said Oliver, almost. "I get a birthday pretty soon. What's a pessimist?"
By the end of the afternoon, the dam was finished. Randy looked at it in consternation.
"But now there's no waterfall," she cried. "I didn't think about there being no waterfall, just that little trickle. I miss the noise."
"Silly, that's the point," said Rush. "Cut off the waterfall and up comes the pool. When it gets high enough, it'll slop over the top again. And look how swell it will be for swimming."
"Well, I guess so," Randy was doubtful. "Will it be full enough tomorrow when we wake up?" said Oliver.
"Nope. Not tomorrow, not the day after, but maybe the day after that."
More than 2 days. Oliver felt it might as well have been a month. He had supposed the pool would fill right up like a bathtub. He was disgusted. They had worked hard. The dam was twice as thick as necessary, and it zigzagged like the Great Wall of China, but it was strong and well constructed. They were pleased with their work, even though it was now finished and they were muddy and would have to take baths. To her collection of wounds, Randy had added a gash on the shin.
"How do you get away without knocking one of your teeth out?" Rush said. "Overlook it?"
"Randy puts her whole soul into her work," Mona defended her sister.
"Okay, just so long as she doesn't put her front teeth into it, too."
"He jests at scars that never felt a wound," remarked Mona gloomily. She was fond of quoting Shakespeare.
But in the next moment she ruined the effect by breaking into a gallop and shouting over her shoulder at Randy, "First dibs on the bathtub!"
She almost crashed into Willie Sloper coming around the corner of the house. He had changed from his customary overalls to his blue serge suit.
"How many of you folks want to drive to the train with me to meet your papa?"
All of them did, even the dogs. They left no doubt in Willie's mind about that.
"Well, hurry up and get tidy, then. I can't take you to town all muddy like that. I just cleaned off the carriage this afternoon."
He certainly had. Half an hour later, when they were all in the surrey, the odor of cleaning fluid was almost asphyxiating.
"Nobody light a match," cautioned Rush unnecessarily. "We'd explode like a blockbuster."
"If you hang your head over the side, it's not so bad," said Randy, who was less in than out of the carriage. As for Mona, she was holding a heavily perfumed handkerchief up to her nose and rolling her eyes above it like one of those fainting heroines in an old-fashioned novel. Oliver was sitting beside Willie in the front seat.
"I don't see why you mind it," he said stolidly to the three in the back. "I think it's a nice smell."
He gave a loud, relishing sniff to prove it.
Good.
Willie smiled at him.
"You're my pal, ain't you? Anyways, it'll wear off in time."
"Well, it looks just lovely, Willie, anyway," Mona said. "It never looked so nice." Willie was pleased.
"Oughta. Besides cleaning them seats, I brushed it all out with a whisk broom. And I took and put Vaseline on the dashboard to kind of limber it up. And then I shined it up good with black shoe polish."
"Ah, that explains the peculiar bouquet," remarked Rush, breathing deeply.
"I thought it couldn't be just only cleaning fluid."
"And notice the fringe?" continued Willie, ignoring him.
"Why, it's all untangled."
"Combed it," said Willie. "Combed it right out, just as tender as if it was a baby's hair."
"Lorna Doone looks nice, too," Randy said. The dappled horse had roses stuck in the bridle above her ears. From the front, with her long eyelashes and comb-like blinkers, she resembled a very homely Spanish señorita, but from the side and back, the effect was both spirited and dressy.
"Father will be pleased," Mona said happily. For, of course, all this grandeur was for Father. He had not been home for 2 whole weeks.
"Maybe he can stay all the time now, like he used to," Randy said hopefully. "Maybe he won't even have to go and lecture anymore."
"Fat chance," said Rush, "with the war going on. Probably he'll have to be away even more."
And that is exactly what was to happen. After the joyful confusion of arrival, the hugs, the shouts, the bits of news that couldn't wait, after Father had had his hat knocked off and brushed and put on again, and his briefcase and suitcase wrested away from him, after he had shaken hands with Willie and admired the surrey and patted Lorna Doone and given her a lump of train sugar,
"Don't let Washington hear about this," said Father.
After they were all packed in the surrey, and Braxton lay far behind, and the green country meadows lapped the road edge in green waves, Randy asked the question.
"Will you have to go away any more, Father? Say you won't. Say you'll stay here now with us all the time."
Father pulled one of Randy's curls.
"I wish I could."
"Well, why can't you? You used to."
"Used to doesn't mean anything anymore, Randy. The used